everybody. My name is Ellie.
And my name is Jessie. And this is All Ideas Are Bad Ideas.
We're a pair of nerds, and we're here to talk to you about pop culture, not rip it apart. These are the things that we know in our hearts to be perfect, but we recognize in our minds to be pretty messed up.
Our bad ideas focus for this episode will be Twin Peaks.
So, before we get started, I think that we should make sure that everybody knows a couple of things about this here podcast. First of all, we're gonna be serving up some grade A free-range grass-fed spoilers today. Because we might be gluten-free, we might be dairy-free, but we are certainly not spoiler-free. So just a quick heads up if you're listening to this.
Also, our spoilers are only ever going to be for the first three original seasons of the TV show Twin Peaks. We haven't watched the movie, we haven't watched the newest season, so whatever we talk about is going to be within the lens of that original airing of the TV show.
So, like, as long as you're caught up with that, and, like, you've got time, it's been out for so long, guys, because we're all old, and death is inevitable. Sorry, okay. That can go away, but I was having a moment, because, like, it came out in the 90s. You know what else came out in the 90s? Me! I came out in the 90s!
As did I. So here we are talking about things that might be older than us, but that is okay, because, you know, the things that we love aren't always the things that came about in our teens or in our 20s. Sometimes they're the things that came about in our mom's teens and 20s, and we still love them.
It's true. Also, Twin Peaks is definitely older than us. It started airing in 91, I think. Oh, please, internet, don't come for my head if that's wrong. I'm sorry. Where do you want to start, Jesse? What do you think was a bad idea?
Well, the thing about bad ideas is that usually they're surrounded by good ones. There was a lot of good stuff in Twin Peaks, and it was pretty revolutionary in its time for the way that it filmed the scenes and portrayed the characters and kind of hit on some pretty hard issues. But I think that sometimes it still fell short of the mark. One of the things that kind of bothered me, I guess, in Twin Peaks is that it really failed to develop independent female characters. They all had to be tied to a male character. And that just bothers me on a feminist level. And I know that that was pretty standard for the time. And they even had some women who went out and did their own things, and that was pretty revolutionary. But by the same token, they could have done so much better.
Yeah, I guess, like, one thing that, like, it's just weird to me. It's like there are so many women who are so central to the plot, but they're still really backgrounded. Like Josie Packard. Like, without her, a ton of events just don't happen. Like a lot of the stuff that happens in Twin Peaks is, in some ways, like, directly tied to just her presence. And her presence is still backgrounded behind her husband or behind the sheriff or whatever. Like, it doesn't really matter that, like, it only matters that she's there because, like, her one action furthers the plot.
It's the same thing with Donna, I feel like, because Donna is a character who really drove the plot. She was Laura's best friend, and she's the one most destroyed by her death. And she goes out and does so many off-the-wall things to try to figure this out. But it's always, she always has to fall back on a man. I mean, she falls back on her new boyfriend. She falls back on the odd hermit who she meets, whom Laura loved. I could not remember.
Yep, I know. I couldn't
either. Describing everybody by their, you know, roles in the show.
I will remember. I have to Google it now.
And it seems that, like, when they went away, when she was left on her own, then everything she worked for just kind of took a sideline. Donna was no longer a big player character. And I feel like they really could have let her be independent. Like, I feel like they were trying to portray her as independent and driven and capable of doing all these things and goals that she develops throughout the series. But they failed at letting her actually do those by making her dependent on all these other characters.
Right. I agree. I'm sorry. I'm still trying to find her name. I need to know. His name. The man's name.
That's okay. I feel like we should have pulled up a list of these characters before, but we were like, oh, no, we just watched it. We were obsessed with it for so long.
We know what's happening.
Surely we know their names.
False. His name is, like, Jimmy.
It's
or
James,
Johnny?
I think. Pretty sure it's
James. This is a terrible, unhelpful cast list. Let's just... That's my... Google? My bad idea for Google is that you don't know how to put together, like, a character list. Fail. 0 out of 10. Would not recommend. Can't stand.
You gotta download the IMDb app that has better cast listing.
Then I have to download an app, and I just hate downloading apps. I'm so lazy. They take up so much space.
You know, what we really need is one of those conspiracy theory walls with, like, everybody tacked up together with their pictures and their relationships to each other and, like, the shit that they did. That's what we need.
Yes. I 100% agree with that.
Let's spend, like, 5 hours before the next episode.
Yeah, we'll just build one. It'll be dope. App. We'll be, like, that picture of Charlie Day where he's just, like, making that face and, like, holding on to the wall for dear life. That's, I mean, the real me, honestly. This is totally off topic. We have failed immediately.
I think we've kind of covered our first bad idea, unless you have any other female characters that you feel were super slighted.
I have a super... Did we talk about Shelly Johnson yet? Because I have a super beef with Shelly Johnson. I am mad about Shelly Johnson because she did not deserve anything that happened to her. She should have picked better men. I get it. Like, she should have, but also...
So, yeah, and at the risk of victim blaming, which we don't want to do. I mean, she was the biggest victim in the series by far. But she had some bad ideas of her own. I mean, she did have terrible choice in men, and she kind of let them make her decisions for her, even after the whole fiasco with her first husband.
Right. It was disappointing to me, I guess, to, like, see her in this position where, like, she goes from Leo, who becomes basically catatonic, and, like, is having this affair with a high school student who, like, is a tool douchebag. Like, get wrecked, Bobby Briggs. No one has time for your greasy hair and the fact that you look exactly like my ex-boyfriend's little brother. Exactly. That has nothing to do with, like, why I can't stand him, but it's a true fact.
Is that he was such, obviously, just a selfish asshole in it for himself. And the fact that Shelly couldn't see that, even after she's burdened with taking care of Leo at home, even when she can't leave the house still due to now the two shitty men in her life, and even after Bobby goes out and, like, canoodles with another girl... I mean, that's... All of those are big red flags. Like, just ditch him. Like,
leave
you
him.
Have a job. She has a job at the diner. She owns the house now because of Leo.
Yeah.
Bobby is just using her. And
stop
she needs
listening
to just
to
get
him.
Out of it.
I just... I also, like, okay. Like, I know that, like, whatever, they're in love. Blah. Whatever. No. False. You're not. You're clearly not. He's in high school. He's in high school! Okay.
Okay, cool. But here's the thing is that... She's insinuated that she's pretty young, too.
Yeah, but,
they were classmates at one point. She dropped out of high school. So the age thing is not a super big difference between them. There are weirder age differences
the
in that
bigger,
show, for sure.
The bigger beef that I'm making with it is less, like an age thing and more of, like, a... Like, you have lived on your own, and you know what it takes. Why are you listening to him? Like, there is no logical reason for Shelly Johnson to listen to Bobby Briggs. Like, she doesn't... I mean, like, I get that there's probably, like, illogical reasons. There's probably, like, some kind of psychological, like, abuse survivor, like, reasons for it. But there's also, like, I find it really hard to believe that, like, after she figures out that taking care of Leo at home isn't going to make the money that she needs, like, she just quits her job and is going to take care of him. Because, like, first of all, you can't live on 74 cents a month or however much the check that they got was. Like, she has to have a job. I was gobsmacked when she quit her job at the diner because, like, that just seems unbelievable. First off, from, like a logistics, how are you going to live standpoint, like, you are not making enough money on his insurance to be living, like, at all.
Well, that's
like, and taking
the thing,
care of
is
him.
That Bobby was convinced she would. Bobby doesn't know jack shit about the government. Like, you know, his dad works for it, and he never talks to his dad. Like, you know, there's zero education in Bobby Briggs about that.
Right.
But I do think that Shelly is super dependent, and I think that does feed into our first bad idea about how all of these women need the men, And Shelly needs her men so much. Like, she is dependent to the point of being unhealthy for herself.
Well, and, like, unhealthy, but also just, like, unbelievably stupid. Like, I don't, like, literally, in my brain, like, I'm like, okay, Shelly Johnson is gonna take care of Leo, and then they'll have money on which they can live, and, like, feed, and clothe, and house, and electricity-fy themselves. Pay for their utilities is the word I should have used there. But, like, when she gets the first check, and it's only 74 cents, I do not believe that your first response should be, I'm going to have to quit my job. It should be, I'm going to have to figure out where to put Leo so I can have a job, so we can have a house.
Right, and that was just the beginning of the second bad spiral for Shelly, because she started it in one. She started in a failed
marriage
with an abusive husband. And you know, in the end, a lot of these bad ideas aren't necessarily her fault. Because everybody in her life was shit to her. And the only person who probably wasn't was...
Norma.
What's her name? Norma, who ran the diner. But Norma has her own shit to deal with. Like, Norma can't decide Shelly's life for her. And so Everybody who was deciding Shelly's life for her was just in it for themselves.
Right.
And honestly, Bobby made a promise. And if he loved her, he would have kept that. He would have stayed faithful to her, and he would have taken care of Leo too, despite the hardships. But he's an asshole, so.
He's a butthead. He's a butthead with bad greaser hair in the 90s. Minor bad idea that I'm going to bring up here really quickly. Was the 90s. Like, even as a holdover from the 80s, why did Bobby and James dress like freaking Grease throwbacks? They got that dirty hair and the leather jackets, and like, I just kept expecting them to be like, Grease Lightning, go, Grease Lightning, and it was very strange. Like, that was an odd choice, in my opinion.
There is this impression that everybody in Twin Peaks is trying too hard. Especially the teens. The teens are, like, so out there with their decisions. Like, the moment that Donna just starts smoking out of the blue, and everybody's like, why? You never... She's like, I did sometimes. It's like, no, you did not. You started smoking to look edgy and cool, to get James's attention, and to feel like you were doing something with yourself. Like... The youth in Twin Peaks especially, like, those characters have this kind of overwhelming urge to, like, try too hard at everything they do.
It's like the grumpiest disaffected youths from your high school times 1,000. Like, man, like, I knew some grumpy disaffected youths in high school. And it was a new plane. It wasn't even just a new level. They were in a different universe. They had moved beyond... They had ascended into new levels of just, like, grumpy, hipster, grump.
And you know what? There is not a single teen in Twin Peaks that goes to school. We didn't meet a single goddamn character that actually attended class. They all just, after Laura died, they all just decided to drop out of school. Like, they all
that
just,
is
like,
so true.
Went to diners and rode bikes and solved mysteries, I guess.
And also, like, hypothetically, there's only, like, 5 teens in Twin Peaks. Like, they're grumpy and disaffected. But, like, even in, like, okay. So, like, recently I sort of binge-watched all of Riverdale, and it was beautiful and crazy. And they also don't ever go to school. But, like, there's other teens around. Like, you go to the diner, and there's some teens.
You see them in places.
In Twin Peaks, it's just, like, here are the 5 teens that exist in Twin Peaks. One of them was murdered, and now there's only 4. What will the town do? It is dying!
And the only other, teen character introduced is a hermit that cannot leave his house, and so also does not attend school.
I don't even think he's a teen. I think that man is definitely in his 20s or 30s. Like,
it's quite possible.
He looked very young, like, in his face, but... Hank? Henry...
We should have looked at the cast list. Think I would remember after spending weeks, like, marathoning
just binge watching it, only thinking about Twin Peaks and only having it in my brain. Yeah, same, but nay. Yeah. Okay. I hadn't even thought about that until my mind is blown.
Ages are just so loose in Twin Peaks.
I am shook, like, Jesse. Why? Where are all the teenagers?
All the young girls just date or, like, get interested in older men or have older men interested in them. That was another bad idea that I had. Like, all of these, like, severe age gaps towards these, like, mostly the young women and the older men kind of skeeved me out. Like, yeah. They were a little questionable. Yeah. And sometimes they were supposed to be. Like, One-Eyed Jax was supposed to be questionable. I'm not dissing any part of that because that was supposed to be the skeeviest thing you've ever seen. But I'm talking, like, I don't know. Like, the boss man Donna from the FBI kissing Shelly. Like, that was just weird. It wasn't even skeevy because he's kind of cool and lovable. But, like, it was just plain weird. It's like, no, I don't think that's how that would work. Like, and... then you had the added oddness of Miss What's-Her-Face thinking that she's 17 again and going to date that the younger guy with super strength.
Yeah, that's what I was
going to
say. Well, because, like, the one relationship, I mean, not the one relationship, but one of the, like, one of the relationships where the characters are actually, like, the same age, by the time, like, by the time the show is ended, they might as well not be, because, like, the woman, what the hell is her name? She's got an eye patch and
she
some
does.
Ginger
and
hair.
And she's a little crazy.
And she can literally.
And she's married to.
A man.
What's his name? Ed.
Yep, she's married to Ed.
Yeah, she's married to Ed. And she gets that weird super strength and amnesia.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway, she one of the relationships where, like, the people are the same age. It's not a good relationship. Clearly, Ed is cheating on her, and she has no idea. But, like, they were the same age.
The whole town knows.
Right. But then she has the brain of a child, and that's, like, you just, like, that was unnecessary. Also, I was reading an article about Twin Peaks, because the Twin Peaks obsession runs deep. And it was, like, a really interesting article, but they made the point that Kyle MacLachlan, because I can remember the actor's name, but I can't remember any character's names. But, the guy that played Dale Cooper specifically asked the writers to not write in the creepy age difference romance between Audrey and Dale that was, like, really clearly budding for the first season and a half, basically.
Yeah.
Oh, two seasons, really. And, like,
it basically came to a head. Like they addressed it fully. Like,
head. I'm sorry, I had to make it. I had to make the dick joke. I saw my chance. It wasn't a good one.
But, like, they addressed that in series. Like, Audrey full-on confessed her love for him, and Cooper's character had to deal with that. And there was still this kind of insinuation that if he weren't an FBI agent, and if she were just a little bit older, then it would probably happen. Like, but the age didn't seem to be the main part there. And, like, I mean, kudos to that actor for bringing that up and being like, this is not great. You know?
Yeah.
So, Shape, that was a bad idea on the writer's part. Like, shouldn't have done that, bros.
I was like,
stop
I was
writing
kind
creepy
of,
age difference romances.
I was sort of bummed because, like, I think that they should have just written Audrey a little bit older. Like, that's all they had to do. Like,
she would have been a brilliant character being a slightly older,
like,
woman. Like,
22.
If she was a woman in her 20s, yeah. Like, just bump her up by 3 or 4 years. Like, if she were a woman in her early 20s, all of her motivations would make sense. Like, her want to kind of prove herself as a woman in this small town, her desire to succeed her father in this family business and to prove that she's fully capable of that, she's kind of taking on these new roles. Like, that would all make so much sense for a character in her early 20s. And then the romances that she had with literally everybody
would have been a lot less weird. And I think that, like, I think it's very, like, frustrating because I feel like they made everybody teenagers because they all had to know each other or whatever. But, like, clearly when I was in my early 20s, and, like, now, there are still teenagers that I know. Like, it's not unbelievable for, like, seniors in high school to have friends who are juniors in college. Like, I think
especially in a small town where everybody knows everybody. Like, they shouldn't have to cop out a reason for characters to be friends with each other, because obviously they all know each other so well. Like, it's such a small town.
Right. And Audrey, like, honestly, Audrey Horne is not, she's not in Laura Palmer's friend group. Like, she gets involved sort of tangentially. It's not like, it totally makes sense. If Laura Palmer is in high school, then Donna and James are also in high school. But Audrey could have been a believable age range of, like, a little bit older than them. Because it's not like she's one of the, like, she's not, like, Laura's best friend or anything. Like, they just were friends. Like, they knew each other.
If anything, it would have made it slightly more believable. Because as it was, she already kind of presented as this slightly older teen who is a little bit on the fringe because people think she's kind of weird and they're a little bit distanced from her. Like, that distance would have made perfect sense if she'd graduated a little bit earlier and just kind of been around only certain people at the high school, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it would have made perfect sense.
And then, like, personally, I think that writing a relationship between Cooper and Audrey where he's in his early 30s and she's in her 20s isn't that weird. Like, I have a friend who is in her 20s and is dating a guy that's in his 30s. And it's, like, normal. Like, it's fine. They're both in a position where, like, the power balance is fine because she's in college and has moved out of her parents' home and she, like, lives on her own and she supports herself and she's in a position to, like, leave him if she wants to. It's not, like, a weird power thing. Like, putting someone who is in their 20s with someone who's in their 30s is a totally believable scenario. Lots of people date older people, but not people who are minors.
Yeah, and that's the thing about age differences. Age differences are not creepy unless they're, you know, say upwards of 30 years or something when you're both adults, or when it's an adult and a minor. And that's what was happening so much in this show, was that there were adults that were well into their middle age, and minors. And that is a difference that's not necessarily okay. Somebody in their early 20s with somebody in their 30s? Yeah, that happens all the time. And that's an age difference that doesn't really matter. But where age does matter is where Twin Peaks was making its, like, mistake.
Yeah, it's like, and honestly, this isn't to be like, oh, Twin Peaks is, like, freaking pedophilia. It's more like, Twin Peaks maybe could have written around some of the characters better just to, like, not have sort of potentially weird power imbalances in their relationships. Because, like, that's the thing. Like 18 is sort of an arbitrary age to say this at. But, like, generally, like, minors just aren't in the right headspace to be dating someone that's that much older than them. And, like, that's the problem. Like, the problem isn't, like, it's creepy for, like you don't know what you're getting into if you're, like, a child. And I mean, I get that, like, teenagers aren't really children, and, like, probably I would have been super mad as a teenager if someone had been
there's
like, you're a
Hollywood
child.
There's a thing,
like,
too, that Twin Peaks is feeding into. This kind of idea that, like, you know, the teenagers, and especially there was an idea back when this TV show was made, that, like, all the teenagers on TV were super sexually active, and they were really cool because of that, and they were just kind of super mature and adult. And I get that that's why it happened in the show, and that's why it doesn't feel creepy in the show, necessarily. Like, you don't necessarily go into these relationships and feel totally skeeved out, but looking at them from an outside perspective, and even a more modern perspective, it just seems like a bad idea.
Yeah, and I would argue the fact, too, that, like, I think that teenagers are often, like, uncomfortably sexualized in the media, like, in ways that maybe are not good.
Oh,
like,
for sure.
Like, the freaking CW, right? Like, I mentioned that, like, I watched all of Riverdale recently, and, like, Archie, this is a spoiler for Riverdale, if you haven't seen it, that I'm gonna drop in here, but, like, Archie, one of the main characters, has an affair with his teacher that's, like, sexual. It's not just implied to be sexual, like, it's very strongly, like, they're doing it. They're doing it, and he's in high school, and she's a teacher. And that's weird. Although I will say that, much like Twin Peaks, they did, like, backtrack and write it off the show really quickly. But it's still, like, and, like, you know, Gossip Girl has the same thing happening in it. And, like, lots of movies have the same thing happening in it, where it's not necessarily, like, clearly media about teens, like, exploring their burgeoning sexuality or whatever, is important for teenagers to, like, see, or whatever. But there's also, like, bad stuff
Well,
happening.
There's a difference between portraying teenagers as being sexually active and as being capable of such, and sexualizing them in such a way that it's always happening in what would frankly be considered unhealthy relationships. It's happening with the wrong people. It's happening with people with the wrong age or experience level. It's happening at the wrong times for the wrong reasons. And they do this for the drama, but it's kind of portraying this idea that sexually active teenagers are constantly making these terrible decisions, objectively speaking.
Right. And it's also, I mean, it reinforces some, like, scarier ideas about, like, who and what and when and where and why, like, sex happens. And I think that, like, in a lot of ways Twin Peaks does sort of try to rectify that. Like, they do write, like, Audrey's crush on Dale Cooper off as sort of, like, I mean, it's not really just a crush, but it is sort of written off as, like, he says, like, no, we can't do this. And, like, so it doesn't go anywhere. And, like, young people having crushes on people who are older than them is totally normal. Like, that's a thing that happens. But, like, there's also just some elements of, like, undercurrents of maybe, like, girl, we should have reconsidered.
And here's something about Audrey that I think fits into this discussion really well. And it's not a bad idea. It's actually something I kind of appreciated that the writers of the show did. But when Audrey was first introduced, I was certain, and pardon my word choice here, but I was certain she was going to be the show's whore. Like, I thought for sure she was going to be the character that was revealed to have, like, had sex with everybody and just been super loose, and maybe she's somewhat shamed for that, and that's the reason that she doesn't have nearly as many teen friends.
Right.
But later it's revealed that she's a virgin. And I think it was kind of cool that they allowed that kind of character, the character who kind of goes out and goes to work at One-Eyed Jack's off the top of her head, and, like, is kind of just openly flirtatious. And they took her and they allowed her to not have had sex yet. And then she was very thoughtful about when she did. Like, when she did, it was with the person after Cooper, you know, her new crush, but with a man that she felt that she truly loved. And she told him, and she said, I want this to be you. I want you to be my first experience. And I thought that was kind of a nice touch about how, like, she had that decision in her life.
Okay, so talking about sort of, like, having Audrey be, like, a role reversal on the, like, general media portrayal of the whole virgin horse and, like, scale where, like, you're either one or the other. This is more of a question, like, I hadn't really thought about it until just now, but, like, Laura Palmer, who is killed, she is murdered.
Yes.
At the beginning, like, before the show ever starts, like, that is why Twin Peaks exists, because Laura Palmer has been murdered. And as the show goes on, you sort of get the opposite role reversal, where you find out that, like, she did sleep with a lot of men, and she was doing drugs, and, like, I guess where I'm going with this is, like, do you feel like she was demonized for that? Like, I kind of don't. Like, I was thinking about it, and I was like, huh. Like, she was, like, she is very much, like, your standard, like, red woman who gets what's coming to her in some ways, but, like, very much in other ways she's not, I guess. Where I was gonna be kind of like, oh, like, Laura had sex with lots of people and did drugs, and then she got murdered for it, because that's what you get when you're a bad woman. But, like, I think that maybe that's not what this show is saying. I don't know. Like, what? Like, I just need someone to talk about it.
I think the show took a kind of diverse perspective on it, which was also kind of refreshing. I mean, I think part of it was complicated by the fact that she is dead. That she starts out dead. You know, there was no knowledge of Laura Palmer. Everything we know about Laura Palmer either comes from what they uncover as they, like, you know, go through this mystery of her murder, or from what her friends and family say around the time of her death. And so I think part of it is that they're all looking at her through this lens of the deceased, and we all just want the deceased to have been good people. You know, there's not a lot of shit talking about the deceased. And so I think that was part of it. But I also feel like the people that she might have really cared about learned of it and kind of weren't necessarily surprised. Like, when Donna learns about the cocaine, she's just like, she knew that Laura was into some heavy shit. She maybe didn't know that, but she understood. So I feel like her friends, like Donna and James, and even Maddie to an extent, kind of just took everything they knew about Laura in stride, because they knew her that well. Whereas the people that were kind of surprised were people like Dale Cooper, who, coming in, just kind of, like, heard that she was, you know, this golden-haired child of this nice couple, and
she worked for Meals on Wheels, and she had the good grades, and she did something. She was, like, the homecoming queen.
She was the homecoming queen. That's the photo that we see at the end of every credit scene. But I feel like that's kind of how the show framed it. Like, the people who knew Laura did not demonize her for that, because they kind of already knew. And the people who were surprised by it were the outsiders coming into it, like Dale Cooper. And Dale's just not the kind of character to demonize anybody for their choices. So he didn't demonize her either.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because, like, there's, like, a very fine line that's being walked there. And I think that Twin Peaks maybe did a better job than I sort of was originally, like, when the thought struck me. I was like, I don't know how that works. Like, how, like, but, like, I guess it's also sort of a thing where it's, like, it's important to, like, tell lots of types of stories and, like, you want lots of people. And, like, just because this girl was killed and happened to be into, like, sex, drugs, and violence or whatever, like, it's not, like, the defining feature of her story in a lot of ways. Like, in a lot of ways, the defining feature of her story is the people who love her, which is cool. Like, it's an interesting take instead of being, like, oh, like, sort of like the Law and Order SVU thing where, like, the only person who ever is willing to give, like, the victims who are, like, prostitutes the time of day is Olivia Benson, like, and all of the rest of them occasionally, like, really look down on those people. Like, that's not happening in Twin Peaks. Like, even when people find out bad things about Laura, they're still like, yeah, but she was Laura Palmer, and she was our friend, and we loved her. And, like, the fact that she got murdered is still tragic, and it wasn't necessarily... We don't think that this was her punishment, her quote-unquote punishment for being quote-unquote bad. Like, so I think,
right.
I guess, maybe my original, like, thought at the beginning of this little tangent was... Well, I don't know, because, like, I was just, like, I wasn't sure. Like, is, like, are we asked to view Laura Palmer's, like, end as a punishment? And I guess the answer that, like, the conclusion that we've reached here is, like, no, Laura Palmer was a woman who... A girl who, I'm not gonna call her a woman, because, like, we've already discussed that, was a girl who had a very, like, unfortunate thing happen to her, and it's really sad. It's not like a smiting. It's not like a smiting.
Yeah, it's not a smiting. It's not some descending hand from above that's like, you're being a terrible person, like, you'll get murdered for this. No, it's that her murder may have happened because of some decisions that she made in the company that she kept. But even in the end, that was taken away from her because it was shown that this entity, this kind of demon, was not going to stop. Like, it had chosen its target and it was not going to stop. So nothing Laura could have done would have delayed that.
Right.
Which I think is part of the trick of discussing these bad ideas in Twin Peaks, because Twin Peaks is not a nice show. Twin Peaks is not a show where good things happen to good people and bad things happen to bad people. Twin Peaks is a show that very much took every character for exactly who they were, and honestly, bad things happen to all of them. So looking at the bad ideas for the show, I mean, we're kind of just taking on some pretty broad things and some pretty debatable things. I mean, I'm sure somebody could argue with us on any of these points about the fact that the show was trying to kind of promote a style and a message that's not necessarily black and white.
I think that's I don't know what I was going to say. I had a thought and then I just completely blanked it. So never mind on that count.
You should maybe put those colorful pins down because I can hear them clicking in your microphone.
I'm glad that you just knew that I had picked up the pens. I've thrown them all upon the ground now. I just need to invest in a fidget spinner. I need to commit.
Yeah, do it. They're like $8 at Walmart.
I'm a trash person, but I will not stoop to that level. I will not. It is a level to which I will not go. I will not descend. I will fidget with my own hands. I don't need them. Okay, sorry. This is a complete, like, off-track tangential.
I think we should find another bad idea to talk about. What is a bad idea that you might have?
Well, I will say, like, representation in Twin Peaks is really odd. Like, Twin Peaks is super white, and I get that the Northeast of America is
super white.
Like, it's pretty white. It's a white joint. So, like, on the one hand, there is an argument, I guess, but there's also, like,
reason for it, but also
it wouldn't be that hard to have, like one more character that's not Josie Packard and isn't white necessarily. But I don't know. I don't, like, I always feel weird, like, as a person who is white and, like, identifies as white and never has the struggles of a minority, to be, like, criticizing, like, all white things, because, like, I don't want anyone to be, like...
We're not in the position to kind of discuss that from the position of a minority. We cannot say that, oh, this should have happened this way, or this shouldn't have happened this way, because we can't say what good representation looks like, because we already have good representation as white
Clearly.
People.
But as evidenced by the cast of Twin Peaks.
Right, as evidenced by most television. But I think that it's by the same token, it's perfectly fair of us to say, hey, there were a hell of a lot of white people in Twin Peaks, and we feel that representation could have been handled differently, or could have played a better role in it.
Right. Yeah, I just, it's interesting. Also, I think for the character? There's only one character I can think of in the main cast that's, a member of any minority group, Josie Packard. And I think that, like, on the one hand, like, you do, like, want people of all races to be playing all types of characters. That's very important. But on the other hand, like, for the only non-white member of the cast to also sort of be demonized and then murdered, like, is a little...
Yeah, even in shady? A show where a lot of people are demonized and murdered.
Right.
I think you have a point. And I think the thing about Josie Packard, because I've been thinking a lot about how Josie Packard's race was handled so differently than Hawk's race. Because Hawk is Native American.
Oh,
and
Hawk,
it's pointed out
yes.
a couple of times in the show that he's not white. Like, the fact that he's not white has been alluded to very directly in a lot of parts of
right.
the show.
Right.
Like Lucy's sister being like, well, you must hate white people for what they did to you. And he goes, ma'am, most of my friends are white people. Like, you know, he's... But I think
yeah.
that his representation was pretty good. I mean, he was a Native American man who was working for the local sheriffs. He was treated just like anybody else, and he acted just like anybody else. His race was alluded to when it seemed to characterize
come
somebody
up.
Else's view of the world or to come up in a situation, but it was never overplayed. It wasn't like he was out there, you know, tracking animals through the dirt or being super spiritual. He was more just a little
right.
bit more accepting about Cooper's beliefs, and he knew more lore about the White Lodge and the Black Lodge. Like, he had very reasonable character traits that would come from his race without making his race the sole part of his character, which is part of why you don't think about him when you think about the representation, because he's just treated like any other character. Whereas Josie is not. Josie from the get-go is this kind of exotic flower blooming in the midst
yes,
of a mining
yes,
operation,
yes,
you know?
Yes, yes, there is that. I would also, one thing that I would, like, low-key argue about Hawk versus Josie is that, like, Hawk is sort of less important for most of the show than Josie. Like, towards the end, when they get into the Black Lodge and the White Lodge and the Red Lodge and all of the many colored lodges... Like, you know, like, Josie is sort of, she's very main from the very get-go, and he's, like, less so. So I guess, like...
It's true, and a lot of the misfortune that befalls Josie is a part of her being a more main character.
Right. But I think that you're also very much right that, like, his representation is handled very, very differently than Josie's, like, where she is sort of brought in as this, like, beautiful, exotic woman who just, like, is beautiful and exotic... And that's all she's there for, to be exotic and beautiful.
Right. Well, and I feel like some aspects of her character made sense for her not being from the country. Like, we're not even talking Asian American representation here, because she's actually Chinese.
She's literally
from China. So, like, you know, parts about her, like, getting English language tutoring from Laura, and not always understanding the phrases that people say or, like, the meanings that people go through. Like, that makes sense to me as a character. That's perfectly
right.
reasonable
not,
character
that's not
traits
what's, like,
for
wrong
a woman
with
who's
Josie
from
Packard.
China living in America. It's not, and that's not what we have a problem with. My kind of problem, too, was that towards the end, especially, of her character development, more... Chinese people started showing up, which was, like, fine, except for the fact that they were all, like, evil. You know, like, they were all there to kind of, like, rip her back into an abusive life, or they worked for the Chinese mafia or whatever. Like, they were all very shady characters. you never got introduced to another Asian person who was not there to hurt somebody. And I think that that's kind of... Right. I feel like that's just pretty bad. Like, you couldn't even introduce a member of Josie's family who was, like, a good person. Like,
right.
It was all just... It was all very bad. And the fact that at the end, that whole Chinese sect of very badass characters, if frankly cruel, they were all headed by a rich white man. Like, he was the big boss on top.
Yeah.
And that just does not seem kosher to me. Like, if you're gonna go to the effort of having them all be Chinese and all be from Hong Kong and all have ties to the Chinese mafia, like, if you're gonna play that card and do that culture thing, like, cool.
Play it all the way up.
Play it all the way up.
Ace is high, man.
Don't go up at the end and be like, but you know who's really in charge here? A rich white American.
This random white dude.
Like, that just, it kind of ruins it.
And yeah, I just, it's like, it's like, it's just odd. It's just weird. It's weird. It's like, it's a weird bit. There's just some weirdness. Some weirdness going down.
There's a lot of weird bits in Twin Peaks.
Proposed sequel for Twin Peaks, or spin-off series, or whatever you like to do, that could also repopulate the town with some teenagers. Tween Peaks.
Tween Peaks. I like it.
Many of the same thing happen, but with tweens.
I feel like it would go about the same, maybe even a little worse.
I agree. I just,
in terms,
you know,
of people being murdered and having affairs and generally making bad decisions.
Tween Peaks. Let's get some more teenagers in Twin Peaks, because I'm worried about the healthy growth of the town. You've
it
only got five young people.
Exceptionally small. I mean, I'm pretty sure I could count the extras on my hands and recognize them in the diner. You know? Like, there's not that
many people.
And they're
all old people.
They are. They are all older, middle-aged people. That is, and then when you go to, like,
the town is dying.
When you go to, like, the hotel and stuff, the hotel lobby is full of, like, older people, which makes sense for a hotel lobby, but then they're, like, the only people you see that are not the main characters.
It's
like
weird.
It's them and, like, two loggers in the diner, and that is it. That is all the people that live in Twin Peaks. Like, I'm pretty sure the most extras I ever saw was literally the first time they introduced, like, the logging corporation. And then, like, the floor had, like, you know, five or six loggers on it. Like, I'm pretty sure that's the most extras I've ever seen in a shot of Twin Peaks.
The Twin Peaks spinoff is really just a repopulation effort. That's, I mean, Twin Peaks is here to make sure that Twin Peaks, the town, doesn't die of old age. Sorry, this was a completely irrelevant spinoff, but I just wanted to make that joke a lot.
It was also irreverent, but that's kind of what we're here for, so.
Fact. More aggressive fact. It was very important that everybody know that that is a fact with a capital F.
Well, we're getting to about 45 minutes, so do you want to go ahead and launch into our ultimate bad idea, which is something that we both agreed on?
I absolutely do, especially since it addresses the main character whom we have only spoken of in passing. We should talk about Dale frickin' heckin' Cooper.
The reason we haven't talked about him so far is that he was just so good.
He was so good
for the whole series.
He's a good dude.
He was written well. He was like one of the only truly good characters. No, like, weird love things. No odd criminal things. I mean, he and Hawk, and probably Lucy. No, not
one
even Lucy. Lucy had weird
things. He did, like, break into the One-Eyed Jack's, which was criminal, but, like, he did sort of... He broke some federal laws there.
He broke,
but, like,
some, like,
heart of gold sort
FBI
of thing.
FBI rules. But, like, it was for a good reason. Like, he's never sacrificed his character or his personality or his identity as, like, a morally just person for the things that he did.
Yep.
Which is why we haven't talked about him so far, because there are very few bad ideas where Dale Cooper is concerned.
Except that part where he got shot and that guy came in, and the bad idea was that Dale Cooper got shot, first of all, and that the dude didn't help him, second of all.
The really old dude set down his milk, hung up his telephone, had him sign a receipt, then gave him like 10 thumbs up, and I was cracking up that entire sequence.
I wasn't. I was like, Coop's about to die. Coop is going down. He's yelling timber. He's going down.
That Coop might is, be the show the is home ending. Of one of my favorite lines in all of Twin Peaks, which is gratuity included? There he is. Dale Cooper is lying on the ground, bleeding to death, with the senile old man standing over him. And the one thing he says is gratuity included? That's just the most Dale Cooper thing I've ever heard. I loved it.
I hated it because I thought he was going to die. Like, it was, like, whatever. It was sweet. Coop's a great dude. But, man. I thought his ass was grass. I was,
All right. So, aside from maybe half of a bad idea about Dale Cooper.
I mean, it's more of a bad event,
to the ultimate
probably.
Bad idea of Twin Peaks. The ultimate bad idea of Twin Peaks.
He becomes the ultimate bad idea of Twin Peaks.
He does. And that is all due to the very, very end of season 3. We're talking
the last
episode.
Damn scene of the last damn series. But he just... Okay. First of all. The Red Lodge thing, where he goes in and everybody talks backwards.
Yeah, the waiting
weird
room.
Weird. It was weird. It was weird. It was like it was weird. It was like it fit the tone and whatever and stuff, but man. Weird.
That it existed and was kind of, you know, the meeting room for his dreams and the spirit of Laura Palmer. That I understood. That kind of made sense to me. It keyed into Cooper's weird mysticism and visions. It kind of seemed like the gateway towards the end. You know, they portrayed it as the waiting room, kind of like the gateway to one of the lodges. And that, to me, made sense. Then the fact that it was so weird was because it was some kind of interdimensional spiritual thing. Like, there were reasons for that, at least. My problem was that it was the end game. The waiting room, you did not get to progress past the lobby. Like, you went into the waiting room.
It was
room.
Very much, it had never been presented as endgame, and then it suddenly was the endgame, and everything stopped. That was, like, the beginning of the bad idea. That was, like, step one of the ultimate bad idea, was that, like, you're introduced to this whole, like, lodge lore, where there's all these different places, and that's how, like, spirits or whatever get into the world, and it kind of explains where like Bob came from, and you think that Cooper is going in to like confront the bad guys or whatever, but then
and he's going in to get his new love back, and he's going in to kind of confront evil. And that's the thing about this ultimate bad idea, was that it's an ultimate bad plot idea. The plot so far had been setting up all these separate things. It set up the idea of, like, the Black Lodge full of evil spirits and the White Lodge full of good spirits. And it set up the idea of love being able to open the White Lodge and hatred or fear being able to open the Black Lodge. It set up all these lore things that kind of set up that stereotypical battle between good and evil. And then at the end, you didn't get either lodge. You did not see the Black Lodge. You did not see the White Lodge. You were in the waiting room, and it seemed like love had nothing to do with it. Cooper went in with love. I thought for sure he was going to do some cool White Lodge stuff when he jumped in, because he jumped in for love, like, not fear. He wasn't even going in to fight a demon, like, he was going in to save his true love. So I feel like that should have been your linchpin for this finale, that Cooper went in for love and Bob went in for fear. So it set up the whole White Lodge versus Black Lodge thing that they've been alluding to for a season and a half. And yet, they did nothing with it.
And in fact, instead of, like, not only did they do nothing with it, in the last scene of the episode, your one character, who has been the good, he has been sort of this, like, I don't ever like to call any character, like, the, like, pinnacle of morality, but, like, for Twin Peaks, like, Dale Cooper is sort of the linchpin of, like, solid, not morally questionable choices. And the last thing you see of Dale Cooper is him being possessed by Bob. And you never know what happens. You don't get the, like, there's no resolution. It's just like, oh, there he is, old demon Bob.
And again, we should reiterate that we haven't seen anything past this, because I know Dale's Dale Cooper's character goes past the original three seasons of Twin Peaks. But even thinking about the fact that that was no guarantee back then. When they wrote this finale, when they aired this last season, they had no idea they were going to make a movie or that there was going to be a revival 30 years later. Like, they did not consider that. So the fact that they still wrote
it... And Fire Walk With Me is a prequel. Like, Coop's situation is not explained in it. Like, the movie is a prequel movie, not even a sequel movie. So, like, they didn't even try to go back and address it in the most next. Like, you have, like, the three seasons of Twin Peaks, and then, like, the next Twin Peaks media they produce doesn't attempt to address it at all. Until you get here, in the year of our Lord, 2017, they took their one upright character... and just tore him down, and I don't like it.
Here's the thing about that, too. Not only was it really a sharp cutoff, there was no battle between love and fear. It was just Dale running around in the red rooms until he literally lost. Like, fear won, handily. Like, there was no battle there. There was no way for him to win. And as almost anticlimactic as that is, my real problem with this is that their ending really didn't have a meaning. Like, I get if they had set up the show as kind of this pinnacle of how, like, reality, the good guys don't always win and stuff. But, like, that's not how they set up the show. They set up the show as a typical kind of show of struggles and then triumphs and things slowly getting better as people work through their problems. Like, because there were things that got better, things that were resolved. And so having the ending where your one morally sound character becomes the actual demon that he was fighting doesn't make sense to me in that kind of narrative that you've portrayed. It doesn't kind of tie together this final concept of the fact that fear sometimes wins. It doesn't seem to mean anything. It seems contrary to all the messages that the show has been putting forth so far.
I think there's two, like, maybe kind of divergent, like, potential explanations for it, which doesn't change the fact that it's a bad idea, but, like, does sort of give a little bit more of a, like, okay, fine, like, maybe, like, what the... And the first one is, like, the show got canceled. Like, this was never... I mean, like, maybe it wasn't Endgame. Like, maybe the Endgame was, like, further in the future, and we just don't know. Like, Cooper was possessed, but then, like, the whole next season was supposed to be about how he got unpossessed, and, like, love does come out on top, or, like, it's, you know, there's more of a, like, meaning. The other one, I guess, is, like, I mean... The show was produced in the 90s, and, like, the 90s were super postmodern, very nihilist. Like, if you think about, like, Seinfeld, the show that doesn't have a point, all of the characters are bad, or if you think about, like, just sort of, like, generally, like, what the media that was being produced at that time looked like, it's where you get your grunge rock that's really sad, like, Nirvana. I mean, like, it could also just be, like, a product of its time. And I think that these are maybe, like... These are the two things that I've thought of that, like, attempt to explain it, but, like, they also don't really negate the fact that it's sort of a bad idea. Like, just because it's what everyone is doing doesn't mean it's what you should be doing, especially when you set up these, like, sort of almost, I don't want to call them redemption arcs, but they're kind of redemption arcs where you've got, you know, your Audrey Horne finding a man that she loves, and you've got, like, James and Donna do, like, sort of end up happy, and, like, by the end of the show, like... Norma leaves her homicidal husband. Like, there are all of these things that happen that sort of say, like, good, this is good. Good things are coming for Twin Peaks. And then you've got this ultimate, like, at the end, like, but they're not. And I don't know. I think, like, just because you can explain it doesn't mean it's a good idea. It's still a bad one.
Right, and that's my thing. I mean, there are reasons that you could come up with, but that doesn't change the fact that watching the show... It just feels wrong. Like, yeah. You end the show and you go, oh my god, it could not have ended like that. I refuse to accept that it ended like that. And I'm sure that we are not the only people who thought that. And I'm sure that back then, there were people who thought that too. Like, I don't think that this is us being a product of our times. I think that there was an actual emotional response that probably most people had to the end of the show that said,
what
was that ending? And it wasn't an ending in a mind-blowing kind of way, or in a, whoa, that was so cool, or whoa, I never saw that coming, but, like,
it was just a whoa, I never saw that coming, because it didn't make sense. Like, I didn't see that coming because there was no reason for it.
And it didn't have meaning, again. Or if it did have meaning, the meaning was not, like, a good one. To the plot and to the story, I'm not talking, like, objectively good or morally good. I'm talking, like, it didn't fit. And that was the feeling that I had at the end, was that this puzzle piece did not fit. You've been laying down this puzzle for 3 seasons, and the last piece is like a flat square. And you're like, this does not belong here. Why did you give me this puzzle piece?
One of these
this doesn't
things
fit.
Is not like the others. Sorry, that's always what I think. But yeah, I totally agree. You've got this thing happening where it's like, there's very much like a path that's sort of being laid out. And I think that like, if there was a fourth season of Twin Peaks and it had been produced immediately following the third season and not in the year of our Lord 2017, then like maybe Dale Cooper becoming possessed by Bob becomes a plot point that becomes back on the track. But when that's your ending, where your ending is you see Coop look into a mirror, you see Bob's face, and then he just smashes his head into the mirror. That's leaving people dissatisfied, and not in like a, oh, leave them wanting more, the first rule of media. It's in like a, I am dissatisfied because you gave me no reason to believe that this was how this ended kind
right.
of way.
And there was just there wasn't even emotional resolution or plot resolution for the other characters either. You'd gone 3 seasons kind of developing a sense of knowledge about these characters and of commitment to these characters' lives, and then you get to the end and it's all about that one moment with Dale Cooper, which just doesn't seem to fit. And you don't even get to see how other people react to that. You don't get to see how the police squad deals with that, with having insanity. You don't get to see what the rest of the town is even doing with their lives anymore. Like, I feel like there were some key plot things that could have been tied up so much better to leave you, even if you had that ending, even if you had Dale Cooper smashing his face into the mirror after seeing Bob, you could have had some sense of resolution from the other characters, from the town
and
itself,
like,
kind of having
maybe
found
maybe where it was gonna go.
Right, and having some idea of how that would move forward. Instead it was some, like, I don't know. I think I get what you're saying about that fourth season, because it felt like a mid-season finale. You know how sometimes shows have those? It felt like one of those things where you're like, oh my god, what happened? And you can't stand to wait for that next week, for that next episode to come out, because there's all these loose threads that are kind of flying about. Except it wasn't a mid-season finale. It was the season finale for an entire series. So all those loose threads, they're just flailing about in the air for the next 30 years. Like, that's not great.
It was just, it was bizarre. It makes sense as like a, you know, third season of Supernatural style ending where like Dean gets dragged to hell and you're like, what? But like, the fourth season was coming and you knew. That's what really is the difference. Like, there was not going to be a fourth season. Although I think I did a swift little Google search because I just, for my own personal Googling, and apparently Twin Peaks was put on an indefinite hiatus after the airing of the 15th episode of the third season, which is usually just like cancellation. They won't play the rest of the episodes, but fans campaigned to get the last 6 played. So I have a feeling that probably the ultimate bad idea here exists because it was never intended to be aired as a finale. Like, it was very clearly, like, the show was canceled midway through the season. It had already been shot and filmed and was playing and then...
Yes, and produced. And so they were producing this all at the beginning of the season with the assumption that they would have another one because that's when they wrote it all. Which does make sense
right. From
a writer's standpoint.
But from a, like, a viewing standpoint, it's very frustrating. It's still a bad idea. It's just bad. It's bad. It was bad. It was bad.
And that's why it was our ultimate bad idea. Because in the end, it was the end. And it was the ultimate bad idea.
All right. With our ultimate bad idea discussed and our Twin Peaks episode drawing to a close, we just wanted to take this moment to say thanks for listening. I don't know how you found us because clearly we're not super famous.
If you found us, you probably know us. And if that's the case, double thanks for listening. You're a real pal.
And if you found us some other way, like magics, wizardry, the power of googly,
or social media,
or social media, whatevs. We're glad that you're here, and we would really appreciate it if you would take this moment to maybe subscribe to us on iTunes, or follow us on Twitter at Bad Ideas Cast, or send us a carrier pigeon with your opinions about the episode, or smoke signals.
It'd also be super helpful to us if you could just spread the word about us to anybody else you think might be interested. If you have a friend or a family member that's kind of into pop culture, and into talking about bad ideas or into making really dumb jokes, just send them our way, and you never know, they might like it.
We might say hi to you, John. Hi, John. Hello. We're glad you're here.
And that's what we mean about dumb jokes. Anyways, glad you were listening to us. Feel free to get in touch with us over social media or leave us a review on iTunes if you feel like it. That would really help us out. See you next episode.